Access number 29039, Mr. Alan Pollock, reel 17. Now, anything else happened while you were at number one squadron with Cranwell?
Yeah, I've probably forgotten just to mention that I think it was in June that year, as every year, a few people were involved in taking their staff college exams, and there were three papers. The third one I can easily remember. It was a precy, where you had to precy something down. That was the third paper, and the first paper was British and International Relations, about Britain's place in the world and that. And the second was to do with air power and strategy. And I can remember, because I knew him quite well, the from Germany days, Roger Parr, I think, then, and he moved on, was a station adjutant, and he was saying, you know, why are you going to take it right at the last minute? But for the last 3 or 4 months, I just gutted or clipped pieces out of paper, and not always having read them, and then very rapidly went through those before the exams. I think I was a great believer in last minute work, and managed to get my staff college, but never went because of later events.
You passed it then, yeah.
Yeah, but interestingly, that setup, which seemed set in stone with the A exam, had already gone. That was long ago, where there was something that you had to pass, I think, before you became a flying officer, but it was just the B up to flight lieutenant, and the C up to squadron leader, and then the Q. And those that, you know, in later years disappeared, I think probably 6 or 7 years after that, and were replaced, I think, by correspondence scores and things like that, and tick boxes and what have you. But that was a little piece of history that came and went. And then on my posting, as often does happen, personal things slightly intervened, and Patricia was having our first child, our eldest daughter, Alison, and she decided to come. We'd got hospitals organised at both ends, and she decided to come in the middle. And as we were going round, seeing someone in Birmingham that we knew, and she started arriving in Ludlow, right in the middle of our switch between the posting areas, and we ended up at Cosford. And I've never forgotten that journey up to Cosford from Ludlow, because I was expecting the baby to arrive at any time, and there was a horrendous rainstorm coming down. And very fortunately, the ambulance driver ahead, he completely lost his navigational sense, but because I had a flying map, I could see exactly where Cosford was on the flying map, and then could look at it, and eventually, sort of with some degree of relief, delivered her to the hospital, which is just outside Wolverhampton. And Cosford's still an important station for the airman's training now, as you know. And the
what was your posting to?
That was down, having volunteered for the NAT, and this was the very early stages of doing NAT conversions. And while I was at Cosford, just for those 3 or 4 days, I was able, because
this was where the course took place, was it?
No, sorry, I've confused you now. Just at that hospital, I was able to do a little flying with the cadets there. I say cadets, I was able, and this is the point of the story really, to compare the public school
Hang on
boys.
A minute, because I'm totally confused. Where is the posting?
The posting's down to Central Flying School, but en route.
Which was where?
At Central Flying School, at RAF Little Rissington.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and en route the baby arrives, and I'm there for 3 or 4 days or whatever it was with Patricia, and did a little flying there at RAF Cosford itself, because there was a hospital there. But what was rather splendid was we had the Cosford young, not apprentices, they were called boy entrants, who'd started quite young, I think 15 from memory, I think they started. But I was so impressed, really, with the difference, in a way, with their approach when they were being given flying instruction, compared with the Air Training Corps and public schools. There was a combination of them, which I'd done up at Cranwell, just a certain amount of flying with them in the Chipmunks. And it was really, you know, a very impressive example, I think, of how Air Force traditions, discipline and the training, how successful it was, you know, with these youngsters. I was very impressed. And the other intriguing thing I remember about that very short time at Cosford, because literally it was just 2 or 3 days, was flying the most number of sorties I ever did in a day, which was 14. But that was included, I think it was about 4 or 5 sorties, but including what we call running changes, so that, you know, literally you kept the propeller running and the next guy came in, you know, and you just chatted to him as you're going out and flew him. But
So you were on your way to do the NAT conversion.
That's course. Right, down to Little Rissington.
Now, what was the NAT
conversion? I don't want to confuse you too much, but I was already posted in September, and that date which I've got down there, which was the 10th of September, I was actually posted to RAF Valley, but that's the way the Royal Air Force system worked. And although I'd never been to Valley, I was on their books, effectively, but detached to Little Rissington. But as far as I was concerned, I was going down to Little Rissington just to do the course. And they'd only got the early aircraft there. I think to start with, there were 2 and then there were 3 aircraft. But the serviceability was not very good at all then. The NAT, as we've mentioned, was a super little, I'd say almost exciting and exhilarating little aircraft. Some people who didn't fly it sort of said it was never as good as the Hunter, and some people that did fly it, I think probably correctly, said it was a bit demanding for a trainer, particularly in the amount of the complications of it. Because the clever design thing, it was really, I think it could have been most successful as Petter's lightweight fighter idea, far cheaper and lighter, smaller. It had this narrow wing, 7% thickness wing compared with the Hunter's 8.5. It had a smaller engine, only 4,230 pounds, which compared with 10,000 pounds or so on the developed Hunter 6 and 9, was remarkable. But because the fuselage was so short, you had control problems at the back. But it did have a very good slab tail, a variable incidence tailplane, which gave it very good control. Very sensitive. But going back to my arrival and that at RAF Little Rissington, I think there were only probably about 3 other people that had flown it then, maybe 4, down at Rissington. Serviceability was inevitably a problem there with it. And also, the other thing I remember vividly was the one thing that the NAT was the speed, relative speed that things happen compared with the Jet Provost. And joining the circuit there, and you only had 1,600 yards of runway at Rissington, and there'd be at least 3, if not 4, other types of aircraft, and sometimes you'd be threading your way through because you're going so fast downwind. That you'd start with 3 or 4 aircraft ahead of you, and you'd overtake almost all of them. It was, you know, and you're actually threading your way, and aspects of that were not exactly conducive to learning things fast, quickly, and easily. And quite rapidly, Kemble came in as an alternative for night flying and that, because Rissington, with its 1,600 yards, even though you've got a brake chute on the NAT, because of the splayed undercarriage, you used to have to fly it literally until about, well, almost to the end of the runway in certain crosswind conditions. because you'd have to keep, you fly it with extra weight on the upwind wing to keep the optimum amount of braking, because it had a splayed undercarriage, you know. And then I just decided in my own mind that there was so little nap flying, relatively, you know, it's literally about eight hours a month, something like that, and went off and did other types of flying at the same time. And you could argue two ways about which was the right way of doing things, and it didn't enamour me to some extent with you know, two or three of the people there, although I like them all. Derek Bryant, who ended up as an Air Vice Marshal afterwards, he was in charge of the project. There was Dennis Yeardley, who I'd already known from Central Fighter Establishment when he'd been at Instrument Rating School, who shot down the first, well, he was one of the first people to shoot down the rocket-assisted aircraft that the Germans had with his Mustangs and long-range escort. Very pleasant, quiet, and very good instructor there. And a young chap called, literally, John Young, who was there, who'd come off Venoms, I think, earlier. And
so, anything else about the course? I presume it wasn't that long a course.
No, but it got rather stretched, really, because, I mean, it was 2.5 months before, and the weather was not that brilliant in the January. That was a bad winter,
so it went right the way through
62
January.
Of 63, yeah. And I don't think I did any flying in January from memory, and then quite a lot up in, yeah, I think effectively I finished at the end of December, and it was partly because the aircraft, the airfield at Rissington, it was 750 feet high, and it was snowy conditions down there, and the airfield was shut for a lot of that time.
Now, so what was your real post? Your real posting was to
RAF Valley, yeah. The Valley was up in Anglesey.
And what was the name of the unit?
That was Number 4 Flying Training School.
And you were
4
an
FTS.
You were an instructor.
That's right. But to start with, it was we didn't have students straight away. We were on what was called the intensive flying trial, IFT. An intensive flying trial really was to get as much flying as possible, both for our own sakes, but it was also for the engineers and the technicians to sort things out and to bed the new aircraft down as they came in. But what was splendid was straight away when I went up to Valley, we were there weren't that many of us. There was only a handful building up. And the aircraft were beginning to come on stream. And in parallel, the last vampire courses were just completing themselves. And Valley, I thought, was a splendid place, and it's lasted to this day, as you know, still doing very much the same role with the Hawks that replaced the Nats, and it's still an important place. You know, Anglesey, as you know, is about a sort of almost a diamond-shaped sort of island, and Holyhead's on the sort of northwest corner of it, and Valley is just outside, and it's the main runway is sort of northwest southeast, the long runway, and it was really a first class place for advanced flying too, because they were coming with 160 hours of jet provost flying. The intensive flying trial, before we get on to the actual students, was again a bit intermittent, and at one stage we were doing it round the clock, so we were flying till 3, 4, even 5 in the morning. But that period, I think, from memory, was probably less than a fortnight. And it was great value, you know, getting to know the aircraft and trying various things. It had some interesting equipment on it, which was new to me and new to most other people. It had a TACAN, and the TACAN system was a great step forward. It was the...
How do you spell it? Sorry,
TACAN. It's a tactical air navigation system. And there were a few beacons around, but also in the NAT you had with it, you had an offset computer. So you could actually, the TACAN would give you the heading and distance or range from or distance to, and the heading, the magnetic heading, I think from memory, to the beacon, and that really solved a lot of your problems about where you were. And we developed quite rapidly at that time a point alpha approach system, so that you just dived through above the Menai Strait, above the Menai Bridge, at 10,000 feet. You went through a sort of gate up there, so to speak, that radar saw you coming down, and put you through that gate. And then there were about five different approaches you could do from then. You could follow the radar entirely, but you could follow everything through on the TACAN, or you could do it on your own TACAN into an instrument landing system, because that then was new, having an ILS on a single-seat aircraft. It was coming in, obviously, for the Lightning as well. And we had this new arrangement. So the old six master instruments that we've talked about were almost on their way out. You had the attitude indicator, and then I think it was called a horizontal situation indicator, that also you had navigate information on it as well. And a much more advanced, you could literally, and when I was doing later the low-level aerobatics, if you knew your instrument, you know, and you could actually sometimes complete your aerobatic maneuvers in cloud and then come out quite safely with it. There was quite a lot for 83 entry who came from Cramwell. They were the first...
83.
We're in 1963. You're right, early 1963, but 83 entry were the first entry from Royal Air Force College Cranwell to arrive. And their first student that went off, interestingly, was a New Zealander, a very pleasant chap, Bruce Latton, who I'd actually instructed briefly, only as one of several instructors back at Cranwell. And there he was, I'd sort of known him on Jet Provostan. He was the first one to go solo up at Valley on the NAT, so the very first student. And then, intriguingly, later in his career, I came across him again when he was on 54 Squadron, when I was on 1 much later at West Raynham. And then much later in his career, after he'd been on Harriers, he went back to Central Flying School as the commandant, by which time it was up at Scampton. But sadly, he's been dead about 4 or 5 years.
Now, how did the first course do on the NAT?
I think they'd been already part stream, because they weren't the complete entry. I believe, but I'm not saying that with too much authority. But what was very strange, as far as the instructional side was concerned, was between half and two thirds of the way through the course, we had an edict from on high that all of the students were to get through. Regardless, it was a kind of almost a political decision made up at a high level. I think partly to do with the political impact of the new trainer. What I hadn't mentioned too was that the intensive flying trial, there were questions in Parliament, I think, from what I could gather, that affected the issue of the speed of are starting with 83 entry, you know, to almost to push things through. So the intensive flying trial was virtually halted early in March, and we, as I say, started with 83 entry. All of them did get through, but there were two students that really perhaps shouldn't have got through normally. And of course, you felt that for the next students down, that the word probably might well have spread. But that apart, they'd all had 160 hours in the Jet Provost, I think, which was a good if grounding for them. And I mean, they were lucky really to get, because they were getting 70 hours on the NAT. That was 40 hours dual and 30 hours solo. And, you know, I think it was an extremely good trainer myself. They went off to in five different directions afterwards. They'd either go to almost in order of merit. The top guys would go to the Lightning OCU, which was then at Middleton St. George. But they'd go via Chivna. Oh, yeah. I was trying to remember the names of the
it doesn't
or
matter.
The number. No. I know exactly where they were. Yes, roughly in order of merit.
So they were the best ones.
Yeah, the guys that handled it, and you could pick them apart. I think pretty definitively, but roughly speaking, the cream of the crop in terms of their fast jet abilities at that age and that stage went to the Lightnings through Chivna. So they had what was called a pre-Lightning course at Chivna, where they were flying the Hunter. So effectively, they'd got by then they'd have 230 hours under their belt, 160 Jet Provost, 70 on the NAT roughly, and then they'd do the pre-Lightning course on the Hunters down at Chivna, which they all enjoyed and were very, retrospectively, they were all very pleased that they did that later, and then on to Lightnings. And I was able to speak to Keith Williamson, that became Chief of Air Staff later, and who'd been out in Oldenburg on 20 Squadron when I was on 26. And he said that without exception, he found all the NAT trained people on the Lightning squadrons were remarkably good, you know, and cope well with the Lightning, because the Lightning was a pretty demanding aircraft. But what was good, and the point of what I'm trying to say, is that the NAT, in a way, was a very good pre-trainer for the Lightning, because it had a similar instrumentation and also the demands of the aircraft. It was a very good sharpener-upper, the NAT, where the Hunter was extremely good, but it was almost too forgiving in a way. The second sort of batch, slightly overlapping with the first, depending on the maturity of the blokes, some of them would be later, even on that first course. I think certainly Bruce Latin was what we call creamed off, and that was he was going to become an ab initio flying instructor. That was a very small element then. I think there was only one or two, if that. And then the next stage was the people that would go on to Hunters, and they would go through out onto the Hunter squadrons. And there was a certain degree of choice there, but pretty limited, because often the students accepted what the instructors and the system recommended. And beyond that, there were people that went on the Canberra courses at Bassingbourne. That was Bassingbourne. And rather, the sort of fourth and fifth levels, rightly or wrongly, had to be the people going on to V-Force, because, you know, they'd got 3 years in front of them of being effectively second pilots. But I think most of them, you know, the Vulcan and the Victor were quite demanding roles in some ways, but they just had a much more slower entry, which was probably suited them. And that was Gaydon for the Valiants and Victors, and Finningley for the Vulcans.
Now, anything about your times? Is this advanced flying training?
Yeah, sorry, all advanced flying training, yeah. There was another FTS at Swinderby that was operating. That was number 8 FTS at Swinderby, had vampires. But very quickly, and probably what I haven't explained very well, was that the vampires were virtually on the way out by the time we had started with 83 entries. So by spring of 1963, we're talking about, it was quite a quick disappearance act of the vampire people. Most of them were posted elsewhere. I think probably, which was slightly strange, because very few of those actually went on to the Nats. People coming in, but quite a few of those would have pre-qualified, because I think I told you it was just all they were asking for was 350 hours sweat wing experience for the instructors, or a full hunter tour initially. And then in the second year, what I didn't mention was after a year or so, they started experimenting, bringing instructors in small numbers. Because I remember David Willis, I think, was one of the first ones who'd actually come off Canberra squadrons through the course at Little Rissington, which was by then had its advanced element operating at Kemble rather than Rissington, because Kemble had better facilities. And they just went down by coach there.
Now, what about it? What do you remember of your advanced flying training on the Nat then?
Well, it was, first of all, there was plenty of flying. And I've totaled it up quickly. And in 1963, I did 315 hours, I think. And that was a minimum, because I used to round things down rather than round things up, as many other people did. As my way of doing things, you know, because I felt 4 out of 5 people tended to round things up, and I'd almost done that since my first tour. And then the second year was over 400 hours, and really, in round terms, to stay current on a reasonably demanding aircraft and roll, you really needed about 250 hours. So 300 was, you were doing pretty well, and 400 was, if anything, particularly on the Nat, was, I was probably slightly overdoing it, considering at that same time, by then I'd become a flight commander on the first squadron that started up from new, because the intensive flying trial had coalesced or gradually transmogrified or transmuted, whatever you want to call it, into the number 2 squadron, and we took over in the new operations block, and I was given the privilege of being the first flight commander, even though Dennis Hazel, who was my number 2, and because I can remember, I think we were both called in or called in separately or something like that, and although he was slightly senior to me and got on very well with Dennis Hazel, and he later led the Red Arrows and knew him and liked the bloke very much. And he was asked if he minded that, because I'd got slightly more time on the Nat then, I think, than anybody, because I was fortunate to be first up to 500 hours on the aircraft of anybody flying the Nat, and then also first up to 500 hours instructional time on it. Something I didn't mention was that we had developed a very good exercise for the...
Hang on. What was your role as flight commander then? What did it mean? Or was it just work?
Well, we actually... If I can just jump back a bit. Before I started as flight commander, in September that year, something rather important happened. Because we were actually developing the beginning of the Nat formation aerobatics, and that was partly linked with what I'm discussing. Up until then, there was a very stringent rule that we're not supposed to do formation aerobatics in the Nat at all. It was strictly forbidden. And by coincidence, in September 1963, in the second week, somebody called Lomax, Bob Lomax, came up, who was an ex-Royal Naval artificer and specialist photographer. But what was splendid, he was tasked to go up and photograph the simulator. And meeting him, we thought, well, it would be very good if we actually took him flying. And on the 10th and 11th of September, I gave him two sorties. And he really was quite remarkable as a photographer, because most people end up feeling slightly ill and sick if you're doing formation aerobatics. And three of us went up, and that really was the beginning of Nat aerobatics. That from that it went through to the Yellowjacks being developed from the first early team, and then in 1965 the Red Arrows with Lee Jones. But Lee Jones